Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 390, titled Political Plate Tectonics. This is being recorded on December 9th of 2002. Now, the title of the broadcast, again, Political Plate Tectonics, is a metaphor for some very, very significant movement on the political landscape that took place in the last week. The central element, I guess you could say, the central element in this apparent political shaker was the resignation of Treasury Secretary O'Neill, along with his top aide, Lawrence Lindsay. The official version, or the official raison d'etre for his resignation, was that basically the economy stinks, or it's the economy stupid, and that was the reason he resigned. Certainly the economy is not in good shape, but I would be very surprised if there was much of anything that George Bush is going to be able to do to put the economy into better shape. I suspect, and I want to make it very, very clear, emphatically clear, that this is conjectural. I suspect that the reason that Paul O'Neill resigned was because of the March 20th, 2002 Green Quest raids. In those raids, the documentation that were produced by the heroic John Loftus in his lawsuit against Professor Sami Al-Aryan of South Florida University, that lawsuit produced some documentation which in turn compelled the Treasury Department agents who saw it to stage the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002. Those raids snared not only elements allegedly linked to Al-Qaeda, but elements allegedly linked to Hamas, elements certainly linked to the milieu of Bank Al-Taqwa, elements that are defendants, elements and individuals that are defendants in the lawsuit that has been filed by survivors of the September 11th attacks, and also directly through the GOP's ethnic outreach section, directly to the Republican Party per se. And again, a close friend of the Bush family, an individual who gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in the summer of 2000, Talat Altman, a director of Harkin Energy, one of George Bush's failed energy firms, interceded on behalf of the targets of Operation Green Quest on April 4th of 2002, a little more than 2 weeks after the raids took place, and basically he was the point man, so to speak, for a group of prominent and wealthy GOP Muslims who were expressing their outrage over the Operation Green Quest raids. Remember, in the first side of the broadcast, we took a look at the fact that about midweek last week, the foreign policy advisor to Crown Prince Abdullah basically told the United States to shove it with regard to loosening the evidentiary standards for combating terrorism in Saudi Arabia. It then came out that a Moroccan charged with being an Al-Qaeda operative and certainly someone who was associated with the Hamburg cell that was involved in the attacks, he had had contact with a Saudi diplomat in Berlin. He'd been in contact with elements in Saudi Arabia, and it developed that the plaintiffs in the $1 trillion civil suit, including members of the Saudi royal family, members of the Al-Taqwa milieu, and consequently, going back to the Third Reich and the Islamo-fascist elements associated with that, as well as to the Bush family and their milieu, in turn, linked to the European elements of the Third Reich and its above-ground and underground phase, that Operation Green Quest raid on March 20th has shaken up a great many things, and it is my belief, it's just a hunch. I suspect that there's probably quite a bit of substance to this hunch, but watching when O'Neill resigned, watching what was going on at that time, watching the fact that Saudi Arabia told the United States to shove it, although there wasn't a lot of discussion of that in the American media, mostly there was a lot of kissing of a blank blank in the American media by American officials. The same week that the Saudi connection to the alleged Moroccan hijacker or alleged Moroccan Al-Qaeda operative emerged in Germany, the same time that it emerged that that trial was going to be apparently providing evidence to the lawsuit. That was the same week that George Bush decided once again to go to the Islamic Center in Washington, the site of past associations between George Bush and the Wahhabi lobby, as I call it. And the top PR people for Saudi Arabia decided to hit the road. Members of Corvus Communication, including a woman who was a former Deputy White House Press Secretary, who had also been the spokesperson for Monica Lewinsky and for the family of Chandra Levy. Recall, of course, Chandra Levy was the intern who disappeared, now turns out to have been murdered. She had an affair with Gary Condit. There's been no indication that Condit was linked to her murder, but it certainly ended Condit's political career, and it was sort of the subject of the day. It was the order of the hour, so to speak, in the summer of 2001. That's basically about all the media could focus on. Now, all of those things took place within a few days of each other last week, and on Friday, December 6th, Treasury Secretary O'Neill, with whom Harkin Energy Director, Islamic Institute board member, and Wahhabi lobby associate Talat Atman, interceded with Paul O'Neill. I remember that was on March 20th. Paul O'Neill, with whom Talat Atman had issues, as they say, he resigned on Friday, December 6th. And the question that I've been asking, obviously, is to what extent the Saudi displeasure and the tremendous economic power that Saudi Arabia wields, not just because of its oil directly, because of the but also the tremendous financial power that recycled petrodollars gives Saudi Arabia in the United States, and the fact that basically George Bush is tied to their apron string, so to speak, I wonder to what extent that and not the economy signaled the departure of Paul O'Neill. In any event, that happened on Friday, December 6th, and there was a lot of other movement. That's why I'm titling this broadcast Political Plate Tectonics. A story about O'Neill's resignation was in the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, December 7th of 2002. This story is by Carolyn Lockheed of the Chronicle Washington Bureau. It's headlined, Bush Ousts Top Two Aides on Economy. Subtitled, Charles Schwab Among Those Rumored for Treasury Secretary. It turns out he did not get it. Signaling deep White House concern over President Bush's vulnerability on the economy, Bush fired his Treasury Secretary and Economic Chief Friday, setting off rumors of possible replacements, including San Francisco's Charles Schwab, who built a financial empire of small investors. The departures of Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill and National Economic Council Chief Lawrence Lindsay on the day the unemployment rate hit 6% marked the first shakeup in Bush's administration, where his economic team has been eclipsed by his more highly regarded foreign policy architects. And again, I'm asking the question about whether basically the Saudi pressure, as again the Wahhabi lobby pressure, as exemplified by Talat Atman's personal visit to Paul O'Neill on April 4th, I wonder whether that was the real reason. Now, notice that one of the people who was quoted in a positive sense here with regard to the departure of O'Neill was none other than Grover Norquist. Grover Norquist is one of the most important people in the Republican Party, dubbed by some the field marshal of the Republican Party. He also is the founder of the Islamic Institute, one of whose past board members was Harkin Energy Director Talat Atman. And also, the Islamic Institute and Grover Norquist linked directly to the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization, as well as to the milieu of Al-Qaeda and the milieu of Al-Taqwa as well. It is an incredibly important connection. Grover Norquist is a very, very important individual indeed, and his Islamic Institute and elements associated with it represent a direct point of intersection between the targets of the March 20th Green Quest raids and Al-Qaeda and Al-Taqwa. And Grover Norquist, who is the president of Americans for, quote, tax reform, unquote, agreed that basically this for some reason Paul O'Neill was viewed as an obstacle for, quote, tax reform, unquote. That is a fairly interesting assertion. But anyway, the article quotes Grover Norquist in a positive sense about the departure of Paul O'Neill. Conservative activist Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform, agrees, quote, if you want lower taxes, Norquist said, The guy in this administration making sure we have lower taxes is President Bush, unquote. I don't think lower taxes has anything to do with why O'Neill left. I think O'Neill basically was getting a little bit too close to the masters of George Bush, namely the Saudi royals, and they're the principal functionaries of the Saudi petroleum industry and the financial lever pullers, so to speak, of not only Al-Qaeda, but also going back to the milieu of Al-Taqwa as well. So again, I'm asking the question about political plate tectonics. I'm asking the question about whether O'Neill's departure was really because of the fact that he wasn't lowering taxes fast enough. In fact, Paul O'Neill had been quite explicit, as we discussed in, among other programs, our visit, For the Record 387, our visit with Lucy Commissar, that Paul O'Neill didn't even think corporations should be taxed at all. I would stress from the standpoint of economics that the United States is currently facing a record current accounts deficit. That is the sum total of all debt, public and private. It's not only due to the failing economy and the debt that that has given corporations and individuals, but we are now back into serious budget deficits thanks to Bush's tax cuts. And that is doing the United States tremendous harm. And ultimately, if Al-Qaeda doesn't get us, and if Islamofascist and underground Reich operatives don't get us, our own current accounts deficit is going to prove devastating to the United States, and it's going to undermine, among other things, the military establishment as well. Quite simply, if you're bankrupt, you ain't going no place, and our current accounts deficit, thanks to Bush's economic policies, as implemented by Paul O'Neill, among others, as advocated by Grover Norquist, among others, those are quite simply going to destroy the United States. So we're going to be looking at some other articles that took place this past week because, again, I am highly skeptical that it was because of the 6% unemployment rate that Paul O'Neill called it quits. Rather, I think there was a lot of pressure from Saudi Arabia. I think that a lot of very, very embarrassing questions were being asked, and I think that ultimately the mistake that Paul O'Neill made, it's probably the best thing anybody in the Bush administration has ever done, but the mistake that Paul O'Neill made by basically giving the go-ahead to the agents under his control to proceed with the Operation Green Quest raids, that, I suspect, was the real reason why O'Neill had to go. That was the reason why Talat Atman, Bush associate and director of Harkin Energy, and a former director of the Islamic Institute, a person who sits on the boards of directors of various institutions, or has and sat on the boards of directors of various institutions linked to the Al-Taqwa milieu and to the Green Quest raids. That's why Talat Atman, on April 4th of 2002, visited with O'Neill. He said nix, and now I suspect those words have come home to roost. In For the Record program number 389, we took a look at another individual who has links to the Al-Qaeda milieu, allegedly, and to the milieu of Al-Taqwa, and that is Yassin Al-Qadi. This past week, there was a major software company that was raided outside of Boston. It is being investigated in connection with alleged links to Al-Qaeda. And apparently, one of the individuals who may have been linked to this was none other than Yassin Al-Qadi, who in turn, through Mercy International, is linked to the Al-Taqwa milieu and through the Mowafaq Foundation, not a name you want to mispronounce on the air, is linked to not only the milieu of Al-Qaeda, but also the milieu of Khalid bin Mahfouz, another close Saudi business associate of George Bush, married to Osama bin Laden's sister, the former head of the National Central Bank in Saudi Arabia, and also, by the way, a defendant in the trillion-dollar lawsuit that has been filed by the survivors of the September 11th attacks. Following stories from the New York Times of Saturday, December 7th of 2002, that's the same day that the papers announced the resignation of Paul O'Neill on December 6th. This article is by Pam Belluck, B-E-L-L-U-C-K, and Eric Lichtblau, and it is Dateline Quincy, Massachusetts, December 6th. It's headlined, Federal Agents Raid a Software Company Outside Boston Seeking Links to Al-Qaeda. It reads in part as follows. Federal agents raided a small software company in this Boston suburb early this morning in an investigation into whether it has ties to Al-Qaeda. The company, P-Tech Incorporated, counts among its clients the FBI, the Air Force, the Navy, the Department of Energy, and NATO. Law enforcement officials in Washington said the authorities were trying to determine whether it had financial ties to terrorist groups or affiliates, and whether it might have been trying to use the software it produces to gain access to classified or confidential government data. The raid, just after midnight at the company's headquarters in a bayfront office park, stemmed from information the government had received from former PTEC employees, suggesting that one of its investors was Yassin Al-Qadi, a Saudi millionaire who was on a Treasury Department list of blocked persons, unquote, because of suspicion of terrorist ties. Notice that this story broke the same day that Paul O'Neill resigned. O'Neill, of course, had been head of the Treasury. Continuing about Al-Qadi, he once headed a Saudi-based charity called the Mowafaq Foundation, which federal authorities consider a front for Osama bin Laden's terror network. The government suspects that Mr. Qadi and other well-connected Saudis have transferred millions of dollars to Mr. bin Laden through trusts and charities like Mowafaq. Mr. Qadi denies having engaged in any such activity. Law enforcement officials said they were trying to determine whether Mr. Qadi was in fact a backer of PTEC and whether the company had funneled money to charities that might have contributed to Al-Qaeda or other terrorist groups. One of the things that's interesting is the list of clients that this particular firm had. One of the points that I've raised in numerous broadcasts in connection with September 11th is my belief that an underground Reich fifth column actively subverted U.S. counterintelligence and counterterror efforts from within. I believe that the late John O'Neill, in charge of the Al-Qaeda investigation, who died in the September 11th attacks, the frustration of his investigation was perhaps the most visible element of this particular sort of fifth column frustration of the investigation into September 11th. This is not to say that there was not also plenty of bureaucratic bungling or simply the mistakes that generally are attendant on issues of warfare. That does happen. But it is interesting to ask the question about whether perhaps there might have been something that PTEC may have been able to provide to some of the Al-Qaeda-linked elements if, in fact, the suspicions of authorities in connection with that raid are true. Certainly, as we looked at in 389, Yassin Al-Qadi, in addition to links to the Mowafaq Foundation, has links through the International Relief Organization to Mercy International, which in turn is a derivative of Al-Taqwa. And by the way, I realize that many of these names are not names that are exactly household words. That's why I recommend, again, the audio files from WFMU. And please do not overlook the long written descriptions that I've crafted for the For the Record programs. Those are on the Spitfire website. And that'll give you a nice, for people that find it easier to read and who like to email around information, that'll give you a nice body of information from which to work. Now, one of the points that I've made in numerous broadcasts is that the milieu of the BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, an institution that had numerous links to terrorist funding, to drug trafficking, to the Iran-Contra affair, to the funding of the Mujahideen in the anti-Soviet Afghan war of the 1980s, which in turn, through people like Khalid bin Mahfouz, an associate of Yassin Al-Qadi in the Mowafaq Foundation, has very strong links to the milieu of George Bush. Bear in mind that one of the Bush/BCCI links goes to the aforementioned Talat Atman, who in turn is a protege of Abdullah Bakht, who in turn is a protege of Gait Faron of the BCCI. One of the people whose consulting firm basically did what Saudi Arabia did to the United States government, basically told it to go bleep themselves, and that was Kissinger Associates. And Kissinger Associates told the United States government to go bleep itself in connection with the BCCI investigation. this is not, under the circumstances, a peripheral consideration because, of course, Henry Kissinger is going to be heading up the quote-unquote, the quote-independent, unquote, commission that is going to be, quote, investigating, unquote, September 11th, and many critics have already noted that that bodes very poorly for this commission, a commission that George Bush, by the way, was very refractory to. He was very resistant to the idea of allowing this commission a free hand to investigate September 11th. And I think it could be very accurately said that Henry Kissinger, as head of this commission, is anything but a free hand. Some of the Kissinger associates' behavior in connection with the BCCI investigation is noted in the New York Times of Saturday, December 7th of 2002. This is an op-ed column by Frank Rich. It's noted, Pearl Harbor Day, 2002. Skipping down, column notes, the strangest player of all, predictably, is Henry Kissinger, whose first act as chairman of the, quote, independent, unquote, commission to investigate 9/11 was to initiate a cover-up, fully backed by the White House, of the identities of the clients of Kissinger Associates, his consulting firm. Mr. Kissinger consistently sees the confidentiality of this list as a higher priority than service to his country. When the Senate's Committee on Foreign Relations a decade ago investigated the BCCI affair, a scandal that itself figures in the tangled history of Saudi al-Qaeda money laundering, Kissinger Associates resisted the subpoena by threatening litigation, quote, through an extensive appellate process to the Supreme Court, unquote. The quote is from the committee's December 1992 report on its investigation. The Senate retreated. So note that Kissinger Associates basically gave the left-hand turn signal to the BCCI Senatorial Committee that was the Senate Committee, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee investigating the BCCI. And the BCCI milieu, as we've indicated during the course of this broadcast and as I've stressed in so many past programs, the BCCI milieu is inextricably linked with the milieu of al-Qaeda and of September 11th. One of the really, well, it's interesting in one sense, it's very disturbing in another, but the massive Homeland Security bill has passed, and apparently a lot of the legislators who passed this didn't read it and don't really know what's in it. And I want to note that one of the things that is very interesting about the Homeland Security Department is that it will, to a large extent, freeze out, apparently. It certainly is something that will be ostensibly, according to what I've read, independent of FBI and CIA. This has, in turn, created friction, the issue of sharing of intelligence with FBI and CIA and the National Security Agency has created friction between some of the intelligence establishment and this proposed Homeland Security Department. And I want to note that, again, in keeping with the whole issue of the discussion of political plate tectonics, one of the things that has become a hot potato in connection with this is the issue of Operation Green Quest and the sharing of information with other departments. And this was the same week that Paul O'Neill resigned. This is from the Washington Post of Friday, December 6th of 2002. The article is by Dan Egan, or Egan, E-G-G-E-N, and John Mintz. This is headline, Homeland Security Won't Have Diet of Raw Intelligence. You can access this article at the www.washingtonpost.com website. The full URL will be in annotated in the description for the Record 390. That will be in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week or so of the airing of this program. Again, Homeland Security Won't Have Diet of Raw Intelligence by Dan Egan and John Mintz of the Washington Post. It reads in part, with the FBI and CIA insisting on strict limits on the information they must share with the new Homeland Security Department, the Bush administration has begun to craft rules for the handling of intelligence in the hope of heading off conflict among the agencies responsible for protecting the United States from another terrorist attack. For now, the intelligence agencies have persuaded the White House that information provided to the Homeland Security Department should be in the form of summary reports. Those summaries generally will not include raw intelligence or details on where or how the information was gathered in order to protect sources and methods. But defenders of the new department, which will consolidate 22 federal agencies early next year, say its analysts occasionally will need and receive access to a wider range of intelligence, including undigested classified information, to fulfill their primary mission of protecting the nation's infrastructure. Skipping down. The new agency succeeds or fails depending on whether it gets what it needs from the CIA and FBI, said Mary DeRosa, a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies who specializes in homeland defense issues. Quote, "There are strong incentives for FBI and CIA not to want a new player taking away their turf. People in leadership will need to pay attention to this all the time," unquote. And skipping down in this article, it's worth noting, a number of officials at the FBI, CIA, and National Security Agency have deep misgivings about distributing raw intelligence too widely, especially to a new and untested department. A number of officials and staff members on Capitol Hill also fear that internal squabbling could hinder the formation of the new department and will contribute to pre-September 11, 2001 tensions between existing intelligence units that authorities have been working to defuse. And skipping down, as an example of what the future may hold, some officials point to a current case of interagency disagreement. The FBI and the Customs Service have been squabbling for months over Operation Green Quest, the mammoth Treasury-run task force that is investigating the funding of terror groups. Some FBI officials have pushed hard to gain control of the investigation, arguing that officials at Customs and its parent agency, the Treasury Department, do not have the counterterrorism expertise that the probe requires. Representatives from each side disparage the other in private briefings with Congress, according to sources familiar with the meetings. To end the dispute, administration officials have tentatively decided to leave responsibility for the Green Quest probe with Customs when that agency moves over to Homeland Security, while putting the FBI in charge of all other terrorism-related financial probes, sources said. So it should be noted here that Operation Green Quest, again, that all-important investigation that on March 20th, turned up some very, very serious worms from within the soil, not only of the Saudi milieu, but the soil of the Bush administration, the soil of Al-Qaeda, the soil of Al-Taqwa, and the soil of the Third Reich in its above-ground and underground phases. Operation Green Quest apparently is one of the bones of contention, one of many bones of contention vis-a-vis the Homeland Security Department, and apparently a dispute between FBI and Customs and its parent agency Treasury has resulted in the Bush administration deciding to leave the Green Quest probe with Customs when it moves over to Homeland Security. Hasta la vista, Paul O'Neill. Another thing to think about, too, is that the elder George Bush, right after Ronald Reagan was elected, was basically, and this is the former director of the CIA, was placed in charge of his own White House, within a White House, his own private intelligence agency with the pre-crisis planning group and the interagency networks that were put together to combat terrorism. I wonder whether perhaps the Homeland Security Agency is going to constitute sort of a further development of that very same government within a government and sort of that very same clandestine entity at the service of the Bush administration, which I believe to be the point element for the Bormann Group and the Underground Reich. There will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record Program 390 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week. WFMU archiving the For the Record programs. By the way, Spitfire website is spitfirelist.com. WFMU.org/Dave Emery website has more recent For the Record programs streaming. A longer URL maintained by WFMU has the rest of the For the Record programs for download only on Real Audio. It's linked to the WFMU.org and SpitfireList.com websites. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program 390, Political Plate Tectonics, being recorded on December 9th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.